This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Nick Dabano joining me here in the studio. Hello to you, Nick. How are you?
Not too bad, Louise. Another big day of football news coming through. A lot of transfer news happening abroad, and we're starting to get closer towards all the international tournaments. Women's World Cup kicking off this weekend, Copa America, AFCON, and big news regarding the Copa America for next year in particular, which might see it affect Australians a little bit more than it has in previous years.
Yes, we will be talking to the Asian Game podcast, Paul Williams, at 5:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time to go through all of those Comna Bowl details and what it might be.
Yeah.
But before we get there, you touched on transfer news. I think we go straight to transfer news. Remember, you can get involved at any time. Give us a call on 0399 44 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio. Or if you are with us on Facebook Live, you know what to do, and we'll get through as many of those throughout the next hour. Transfer news, massive, massive news, particularly surrounding one French World Cup player.
Yes, Kylian Mbappe.
What is going on here?
Well, there are rumours circulating that he's handing a transfer request to PSG. Now, we can read into it as much as we like. There's been no official confirmation whether this is true or not. We see it almost with all those big players, and even Antoine Griezmann's a good example of it. Almost every transfer window, there's a rumour linking them away that they've handed in their transfer requests. They've had enough. Is Kylian Mbappe actually going to leave? I'm not believing it until I actually see it. I want to hear the 100% confirmation, because I don't know whether this is going to happen just yet. He's only been at PSG for, what, now 2 seasons? I think that he'll still be there for another year at least. I can't see it happening. That's just me speaking in terms of putting my tin hat on and saying he's not gone anywhere.
So when he was at the Football Awards, I'm not quite sure which awards ceremony it was, because there are just so many. I think it was the Ligue 1 Awards. He was asked about his future and what he would like to do, and he said he would like to be given a more responsibility, potentially at another club or with another project. And from there, those quotes then escalated throughout world football. Everyone thought that this was his time to move on. He's going to a new club. PSG then came out after that and said, he's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. We've secured him, and that's, you know, what is happening. And now Mbappe, since PSG have said that, Mbappe has reportedly come out and handed in a transfer request. So I don't know.
There's a rumour that it's come from the Spanish TV channel El Chiringuito. I think that's how you say it. I'm not very Spanish, so I don't actually know how to pronounce that properly, but I did my best. And I think Mbappe potentially to Real Madrid. Look, Real Madrid will always be interested because they've got the money to spend, and there is still the lure to go play for them. Still in the Champions League next year, and they've got a new project, basically starting from ground zero now after the days of Cristiano Ronaldo, and Gareth Bale potentially on the way out as well. So they're going to have to try and build a new attacking setup. So Kylian Mbappe or Eden Hazard or even Neymar as part of the names have been linked to go to the Galacticos. Whether it happens or not is a whole other question. But Kylian Mbappe to one day go to Real Madrid, potentially, maybe not this time around, but I think one day. I can't see him staying at PSG in particular down the track if, you know, it starts to get to a point where he hasn't won anything at PSG. Like, what happens if it gets to that point where they constantly go out early in the Champions League and they win the league on every year?
It's like Groundhog Day.
Exactly, and it gets to a point where it sort of just becomes monotonous, where you're doing that every single season. So they've obviously signed Luka Jovic, it's been announced. He's the young Croatian sensation who's joined, going to help him out up front. Obviously, Karim Benzema has been there for years, but
that's Zidane's second signing.
Yep, so it will help, obviously, bolster that attacking setup. But if they sign Eden Hazard in particular, then I think the Kylian Mbappe move might sort of be hindered. I couldn't see him going to Real Madrid. And, well, they might decide to build with the likes of Vinicius Junior as well, who is another fantastic talent they've got playing the Brazilian winger, who I think that they could probably build around as well. But Mbappe, I'm going to go out and say I don't think he's going anywhere this offseason.
I agree with you. I don't think Mbappe is going anywhere this season. Maybe in the next transfer window, but I think he will stay at PSG for at least one more season before he moves on to potentially Real Madrid if there is an opening for him. Which you'd most likely think there'll always be an opening.
He's only 20 years old. Let's remember that. He's so young.
I asked Josh this question last night. With the likes of Kylian Mbappe and Matthias De Ligt, we'll come to De Ligt soon because there's also been some more reports coming out about him. But with these players who are so young, De Ligt is only 19, Mbappe 20. Both of them want to go to dreamland, which is Barcelona and Real Madrid. Once they get there, because they are still in their early 20s, where do they go after that? What is after those big clubs?
The only other thing is you go conquer another league, similar to Cristiano Ronaldo, but how long are you actually going to stay? Because Kylian Mbappe has been in France, well, a PSG in the capital for 2 years. So I would say stick it out for another couple of years, then make the move to Real Madrid. And when you get there at about 22 or 23, whether that move is, or if he goes to Barcelona, then you can go conquer Spain. But then after that, as you do say, where to next? So that's when you'd start to be thinking, okay, you're going to do a Lionel Messi and stay there for your whole career and potentially retire there? Or are you going to maybe go to the Premier League? Are you going to the Bundesliga? Or are you going to go to Serie A? Are you going to try and conquer one of the other big European leagues and maybe try and achieve something there? So it all comes down to our own player ambition, because maybe some of these players did go for some clubs that obviously when they were kids, and maybe they had ambitions to go play in those leagues. I know for a fact, and I don't want to be that guy, but Kylian Mbappe was an AC Milan fan growing up. So what about when he gets to about 27? He's done everything he can at PSG, goes to Spain, does what he can there, and he thinks, well, why don't I go and test my luck over in Italy and go play for a Milan or a Juventus or even an Inter at the time? Go to the Bundesliga and go play for Bayern Munich, or go to the Prem and play for one of the English giants. So there's all those things to weigh up at the end of the day. That's probably the only thing. You go conquer one league, go do the next. Similar to what Ronaldo's been doing throughout his whole career. He's gone from Sporting to Manchester United to Madrid and now to Juventus. Do you follow that same path, or do you stay loyal with one club and try to become a club legend at the one place?
I don't know if I can see Mbappe doing that, but I can definitely see De Ligt doing that. I can see him going from Ajax to Barcelona and staying there for the rest of his life.
You think so?
I 100% believe so.
Look, I'm not sure, because I need to know these players better and see what their mentality is when it comes to that. Matty De Ligt, another guy, so young, so much to the way up. If he goes to Barcelona next year, what I think will be intriguing will be to see what happens to the other centre-backs that are around them, because you've got Lenglet, you've got Piqué, and you've got Samuel Umtiti. So I think one will go.
Uncertainty around why he hasn't moved there yet is because will he get enough game time at Barcelona?
Well, I think
should
he will
move there?
I think he would go straight into the starting 11, and Barcelona could get a nice little transfer fee for maybe Umtiti or Lenglet, but they've only been there for a matter of years. So would you make that move, or are you thinking long-term about Gerard Piqué potentially retiring in the next few years and saying, well, if Piqué is going to maybe make a move to go to the MLS, maybe decide to end his time in Barcelona and go somewhere else, but he's still playing some pretty good football at the moment, so I can't see it happening. But De Ligt's got lots of way up, because you've got to think about which club's going to offer him straight away first team football, and where you're going to be able to grow yourself personally and also as part of a team. Manchester United, I think, is an interesting prospect for Matty De Ligt, because he would go in and immediately become the man. But
100%.
At 19, can he shoulder the responsibility of going to Manchester United and be the man straight away? Or is he going to be necessarily in a position where he might struggle under that extra pressure of playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world? And maybe if he goes to Barcelona, he plays second fiddle to Piqué, a guy who's done it, a seasoned veteran, learn your craft, and then potentially, as time goes on, you become that guy once Piqué has moved on.
I would hate to see De Ligt go to Manchester United and then regress. I would just...
Could you see him regressing at Manchester United?
I could, because unless Manchester United go and get some better defenders, then...
Well, he's been playing alongside Phil Jones and Chris Smalling, and that's not necessarily the prospect you want.
He's going to be by himself, other than David De Gea. We don't know what's happening about his future. But if it's just De Ligt, then I don't think the others are good enough, you say. Phil Jones, he needs to go.
Well, Phil Jones, Chris Smalling, they're unbelievable. They're still at the club. They've been great servants for as long as they've been there. But they're getting to a point now where Manchester United, if they want to be serious, it's time to probably move on from Jones and Smalling. I think Baye and Lindelof have a bit of a future. They're still young centre-backs and probably could build around them. Another Barcelona player that could potentially be on the way out is Luis Suarez. Now, Inter Miami, the new MLS team coming in, headed up by David Beckham, are actually interested. And according to reports, they've offered him a Luis Suarez a 4-year deal to be basically their first signing. Luis Suarez now is not getting any younger. He's now on the other side of 30. There's been names such as Daniele De Rossi that's been linked to him, as well as a Sergio Busquets and even Lionel Messi as well. So they're looking to build something quite special over there in Miami. Could you see Luis Suarez potentially making the move to the MLS soon, or do you see him staying at the Spanish Giants for the time being?
The team is due to play in 2020. I could definitely see Suarez moving.
You reckon?
I could see him moving.
So you reckon one more season at Barcelona, then potentially making the move?
Yeah, I definitely could see that, because I think that Barcelona at that point at the moment, they're very, very reliant on Lionel Messi. I think, you know, he's still got a couple of years left in him because obviously he's outstanding. But I can see some of the other players around him, like a Suarez, potentially moving on.
Well, Suarez is 32 now, and he'll be turning 33 next year.
Piqué will retire soon.
Yeah, well, look at this Barcelona team, and it's not necessarily getting any younger. There's a few players that are starting to get on a little bit. Ivan Rakitic is now, he's 31, turning 32 next year, I
Messi
believe.
Wants him out of the squad.
Yeah, well, so he could potentially be on the way out. Messi will be turning 32, I think, next week. We've got Sergio Busquets, who is now 30, turning 31 in July. And you got Gerard Piqué, who is 32. So their key players have been there for quite some time and now started to get on. And you include Arturo Vidal in that discussion as well. He's on the other side of 30. So you've got to weigh up as you got to start to think about the next wave of players coming through, who are going to be coming in to take that next step. And they've got guys as well like Kevin Prince-Boateng, Jose Murillo as well, who are older than 30. Are they going to start to promote Ozzy Dembele, Artur, Malcolm, these guys, Lenglet, Umtiti, and potentially bring them in to become big parts of this future? Have they already shoehorned them into places where they think they're going to make that next move in their career once these guys move on? That's a whole other thing to weigh up. So if Luis Suarez moves on, Barcelona's got to make sure they've got someone ready to come in and replace him. Potentially Mauro Icardi could be a name that has been linked to them. He's now 25. He's a guy that they could look at to potentially replace Luis Suarez. He's going to be one of the names linked to every big European club this offseason, because I doubt he'll be playing for Inter next season. So Suarez out, Icardi in, maybe. Maybe down the track they could be looking at that.
I think Barcelona need to rekindle themselves to the fountain of youth, La Masia, and bring up the products from there. Well, but we know it's...
Well, they've still got some good young players coming through, but I think it's a matter of time about whether they're going to actually trust those players in those big games, and or they want to go and buy some players to help necessarily usher that next wave of players coming through.
I don't think it's about trust. I think it's just about where the direction is heading at the moment. Because they have so much money, at this point in time, they would rather go and get a big name just to say we've got that big name. Well, that is the climate at the moment.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, only one club, or one of very few this season, managed to prove that wrong. And that was Maurizio Pochettino. Didn't sign a single player in 18 months and managed to get himself to the UEFA Champions League final. Make of it what you will. The facts are facts, Nick.
I don't want to be that guy that says, and I know that if George Anikin's listening, he will come in tomorrow and he will put my head on a swivel. All I'm saying is, look, Tottenham were great to get to the final, but it came back to bite them late in the Premier League season because their depth was not up to scratch and they were tired. The players in that first team were wrecked. They were getting injured towards the end of the year, and it came back to bite them. Because in the league, they stumbled into the top four. They weren't that great in the second half of the season. They were right in the title race for the first half of the year, then completely fell apart. So I think that the example of not buying anyone, you need to constantly improve. Every team needs to keep buying players, because the other teams, you've got the target on your back. Every team around you is going to want to improve and try bridge the gap. So for Barcelona now, the target's on their back in La Liga, but their target now should be Liverpool, because they want to win the Champions League. So Barcelona should probably buy a couple players, but at the same time, considering how good their youth setup is, they probably should be looking at some of these guys as squad players to come in those La Liga games, play off the bench, rotate your squad, because we did say the players they've trusted for so long are getting on now. So they've got to start to look to maybe some guys, like, as we said, Matty De Ligt or some of those other young players that are playing around the world to come into this team and trust who they've got in Barcelona B to come through. Because remember, Barcelona B are playing in Segunda. Like, that is a pretty good level for a young team who are only 17 to 19 years old.
Well, it's a second division in Spain.
Yeah.
So it's just under La Liga. So, of course, it's good.
And it was only a few years ago, I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago, Barcelona B won the Segunda division. So it goes to show they've got the capability within their stocks of the players they bring in that are good enough to win a Spanish second division. There's definitely talent there. So it's just a matter of actually trusting the youth and pushing them through that next step.
Before we move on from the topic of De Ligt, Liverpool have reportedly entered the race to sign Ajax's captain.
That's interesting. That is really interesting. Could you imagine De Ligt and Virgil van Dijk as the centre-back pairing? Now, Netherlands will have that as their partnership for years to come, which could very well win them not just the Nations League this week, potentially going into the Euros, potentially looking to go into the World Cup. That is extremely, extremely scary to think about.
Isn't it?
Because if Liverpool sign both, now Joel Matip is what? He's about 31. Dejan Lovren didn't play much this year. He's getting on a little bit. So maybe they're thinking long term in that aspect of getting in a centre back like Matty De Ligt. If Matty De Ligt signs for Liverpool, see you later. And their back four, including Alisson, that is so young. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Andy Robertson, those two. Wow. Like that. That for me, if Liverpool fans out there listening, you'd be loving that, because if you can get those two in, I would be breaking the bank to get that man into the club.
Well, Jurgen Klopp will be offered a contract extension within the next couple of weeks, if not days. And I think he certainly is looking long term.
I think so. He doesn't want to go anywhere and he will want to build
on
this.
Because that is a serious bid.
They want to go win the league now. They've won the Champions League. They want to try and now... He said, I want to now go and take down Man City. And I still think Liverpool, there may be one or two signings away from doing that. I think Man City's midfield this year is probably one of the best in the world. It's a team of battlers. They've done really well. Very underrated midfield three. The likes of Fabinho, Gini Wijnaldum, Jordan Henderson have performed commendably all year. So if they can get themselves in someone like, you know, a centre-back like Matty De Ligt to help out Van Dijk and have that build for potentially 5 to 6 years and bring in another central midfielder, and probably I still think they might need to get a backup striker as well, as Divock Origi's played this season, and even a backup left back. Liverpool are going to be a scary team for years to come. It's simple as that. This team has got so much potential and they've got some great young players as well who we haven't seen much of. I know that there's a guy called Ryan Brewster as well who's really highly rated amongst the Liverpool fans, even the little inside the Liverpool Academy. And they've got a guy called Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain coming back next year who's like a brand new signing. So they've got players in that team that they're going to go to a next level next year, Liverpool. So I think watch this space when it comes to them.
It'll be interesting to see what actually happens with Brewster, though, because he is the under-17 FIFA World Cup winner. He took out the title with England in 2017. Do they retain him or does he just drop off like many of the others have?
I think he'll go out on loan next season, if anything. I think that'd be a good move for him. Go to the Championship next year. Get yourself some good game time. I think that there's been a lot. The great example of that, there's been some great players at other English clubs that have been able to do that. Tammy Abraham, one in particular, who's gone to Aston Villa and had a great season in the Championship, who I think Chelsea should entrust a little bit more.
Gotten more minutes under his belt now.
Yeah, Reece James, who went out on loan to Wigan this year. Great season. Championship team of the year, now in Chelsea's first team. There's other guys out there. Callum Hudson-Odoi, who I think needs more minutes, criminally underutilized. Everton's got two in Calvert-Lewin, Ademola Lookman as well. So I think if Liverpool can maybe give Brewster those chance and go out on loan, go to the Championship, a mid-table Championship team, and play consistently, that would be great for his development as a young player and potentially become the player that Liverpool fans will be hoping for by the time he matures.
While we are talking about squad's defence, Unai Emery is looking to potentially offload four of his defenders this summer as he... Yep. Continues to rebuild.
So who are they getting rid of?
Koscielny, Monreal, Mustafi and Lichtsteiner.
Well, Lichtsteiner today was actually announced he's gone, so he's not getting a contract extension next year.
So that's already one.
Yeah, so Steven Lichtsteiner will not be at, according to this, he will definitely not be at the club next year. I think that he's getting on now, Lichtsteiner. He was signed on a temporary basis. He was great for Juventus for so long, but now at 35, he's probably going to look to now potentially move back to Switzerland or maybe a move elsewhere. I think Shkodran Mustafi, I said with Josh Parrish on the lightning round last Friday, he's almost become a meme. Like, he's had a really bad time at the Gunners. I think he needs a fresh start somewhere else because he's only 27. And before that, when he was at Valencia and also when he's playing for Germany, he showed quite a bit. I'd like to see him go somewhere else and start fresh because I still think that when he's at his best, he shows a little bit. Koscielny's been there for so long. He's played over 350 games for Arsenal.
Part of the furniture.
I think if he sticks around next year, he'd probably be only a depth player if that. And he would go to most other clubs and just walk in and start, I think, even at the age of 33. Turning 34 later this year, I think he'd go somewhere else and be part of something big, even if he went to somewhere like France. And Monreal as well, almost 250 games for Arsenal. I think that he'd be looking to move on to. Arsenal, they're gonna have to build around Socrates next year in defence. Hector Bellerin returns next season. Whether he's still at the club, he's always linked everywhere. Ainsley Maitland-Niles as well. Kolasinac as well as their left back. They're going to have to go out and get defenders because that's where they fell apart a lot this year.
Arsenal are just a club, though, that don't really like to go for the big, big names.
Well, they haven't really. They really haven't gone after big names for quite some time. They went and got Aubameyang, they went and got Ozil, and they've gotten Lacazette over the years. But I think now it's time for them to go and maybe look for some more big fish. But I think Arsenal just aren't a destination club anymore. Like, that, they're not in the Champions League. They're not in holding the same level. If you got an offer from Tottenham, even from Chelsea, well, Chelsea not so much, got a transfer ban, you'd be looking at that. Arsenal, they're in limbo at the moment. That's probably the best way to sum it up. They've almost had a bit of a ground zero now. They've got some great attacking players to build around. Aubameyang, Lacazette, great players. I think Mesut Ozil, it's time for him to move on. I think that his body language sums it up. He's not the player he once was. Henrik Mkhitaryan hasn't lived up to expectations as they would have liked. And they have to really start again. I think that's the best way to sum it up. Guendouzi and Torreira in the midfield showed a lot. But other than that, they're going to have to really look to bring in some new talent. As well, losing Aaron Ramsey is a big one in the midfield.
Do you think that Mesut Ozil could go back to Germany?
I think he has to. I reckon he has to. I'd love to see Ozil go to Serie A, though, because I reckon that would suit his style brilliantly. A slower game, allow for him to get in good positions, use his creative flair to the best of his ability. I think Ozil's done everything he can throughout his career. He's won a World Cup. Mm. He's had quite a solid time at Arsenal. He was great at Real Madrid. He could even go back to Bayern, look to go back to go play over in Germany. He's had a great time, started his career at Schalke and also at Werder Bremen as well. So I think for Ozil, I think that it's about time for him to maybe move on and try somewhere else. He's only 30 at the moment, so there's a lot more time still left in his career as well to achieve some solid things elsewhere.
Speaking of elsewhere, Arsenal are looking to discuss a new contract with Aubameyang because he is flirting with the idea of going to China. Aren't they all at the moment? Cashing in on their European dreams.
It sets you up for life, does it
Asia?
Not? You know, so he's... His time at Arsenal, though, I must say, win the Golden Boot in your first full season, very solid. Considering as well, he hasn't played the whole year as a natural striker, playing out wide as well. Kudos to him, but I think he should stay. I don't want to see Aubameyang go to China. He's 29 now, though, so he's not as young as probably what people think because he burst onto the scene at a really mature age, about 24. So I think, look... If I was Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, stick it out because going to China, you're going to end up there for 1 year and you're going to be coming back. It seems to be happening all the time. Just stick by, mate.
We'll have to wait and see what happens because Arsenal, as I said, are looking to secure his services for another 3 years. As you say, even though he is 30 in 2 weeks' time. Moving on, you touched on the Serie A. Cristiano Ronaldo, I love this. Cristiano Ronaldo has given Juventus the green light to hire Maurizio Sarri.
Great. Well, he shouldn't be making that decision. It should be the board, but I think that's a great move. If Maurizio Sarri leaves Chelsea, though...
You can tell who's calling the shots at the club.
Similar to Messi at Barcelona in that same aspect. But look, Sarri to Juventus, big tick. Sarri leaving Chelsea, though, big cross.
Who comes into Chelsea if this happens?
If they get Frank Lampard, they're taking 10 steps back because he's not ready. He's not ready. And a lot of clubs make the mistake of bringing club legends to coach the team straight away. One in particular, AC Milan's done it, and it has totally backfired. Frank Lampard needs more time. He needs more time to build. He almost got promoted in his first year at Derby, but give him a little bit more time to build on his craft before to making such a big move from Derby to Chelsea.
Right.
That's huge.
He needs to bridge the gap.
He doesn't have a transfer budget or transfers to actually use this year because they got a ban. So it's not like he can really improve his squad at all and actually have that same quality. If he loses Hazard, that's the end game right there.
Yeah.
I would like to see Sarri, if he goes to, but talking about him going to Juventus, I think he could really do some very special things. But it's whether the style of play suits, because I think Paulo Dybala would really flourish in a nice setup playing as that number nine, similar to what Dries Mertens did when he was at Napoli and Sarri was the manager. And I think wouldn't be surprised if we see some of his favourites maybe come over. Maybe Jorginho would be flirted with the idea to maybe come over and play for Juventus because they do need midfielders. I think that this will be a great move for Juventus, but for Chelsea, as I said, it's going to be disastrous if they lose Maurizio Sarri. So I think he was just hitting his straps now, winning the Europa League. He's getting the team together. It's another season under the belt. He'll work with exactly the same players, with maybe a few lone players coming back and Christian Pulisic. I think they do better with Sarri being there because he knows the players than Frank Lampard coming in.
So do you think he needs to stay at Chelsea for another season before making the move? But then again, that could be a missed opportunity because Juventus will need to find a manager regardless of what happens in this transfer window.
They do.
They do. They really do.
Who do they go after?
Well, it's got to be Sardi.
We've heard that...
It's either Sardi or Pep.
That's it.
Yeah.
We heard that one of the reporters in Italy who broke the news at the start that Ronaldo was going to Juventus has actually insisted that Pep Guardiola is going to Juve, and it's not Sarri.
Well, it's going to be a waiting game until we find out, and it's literally going to be right until that nitty-gritty when we actually find out who it is, because everyone's going to be saying different. I don't know about Pep going. I think it's more waiting if City get their Champions League ban. If they do, then maybe Guardiola would make the move. But I think Guardiola will be sticking fat at Man City at this point in time. I think Sardi will be going to Juventus. Louise, let's talk Nations League, because that kicks off tomorrow, the semi-finals. First ever UEFA Nations League semi-finals that's ever been taken part. This is the first game tomorrow, taking on is Portugal and Switzerland, and Netherlands and England on Friday morning over. Both games being played in Portugal. Big time now for these teams to get some silverware. Portugal, the winners of the Euros back in 2016. England had that fabled run to the World Cup semi-finals last year, while Switzerland and Netherlands weren't even at the Euros or the last World Cup, but have had a bit of a rejuvenation cycle with new players coming in. And Switzerland have been almost the underachiever, almost been thereabouts all the time, but they've got a chance to win something. The real underdogs of this whole tournament.
Weren't Switzerland the country that played all the minnow countries just so they could get
bolster their ranking? I'm pretty sure that might have been them. I need to fact check that one, but I think they might have been. But
this is going to be a good game because Cristiano Ronaldo returns.
Yes.
As does his emerging prodigy, João Felix.
Yes. And
who's had an outstanding season for Benfica. And it's just his senior debut season as well. He scored 20 goals and completed 11 assists. No wonder they're labelling him Ronaldo's successor.
Well, I think João Felix probably won't start the game, but he'll definitely feature at some point. I'd love to see him come off the bench. I think that they'll probably go with Ronaldo, Bernardo Silva, and probably Gonçalo Guedes, similar to what they went with in the World Cup. I can't see it changing too much, but I think we might see Felix at some point. Obviously, André Silva didn't get called up, who was the former heir apparent to Cristiano Ronaldo, but hasn't necessarily panned out in that way. So big pressure on the shoulders of young João Felix, but they've got a really exciting mix of young players that are coming through. Diego Jota as well was absolutely fantastic for Wolves this season. He gets his first call up too. So some new names in this Portugal mix. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I think that the winner of the Netherlands-England game is going to go on and win the Nations League. I think Portugal and Switzerland, I think that unfortunately one of them won't be coming away with the trophy. But I just have that feeling that whoever wins that game between Netherlands and England, they're the two exciting teams in Europe at the moment with the young talent coming through.
I'm going to say Netherlands.
Look, Netherlands, they're almost, they've just got too much talent at the moment, as those young prospects. You've got De Ligt, Van Dijk, Van den Beek, Memphis, De Jong. There are so many great players in that team. And you just think if they get it all right, England are going to have a tough game. And this is going to be, this could almost be the final. And I think that it's actually unfortunate that it is, and it actually isn't. So for England,
Frankie De Jong is guaranteed to start that game.
Yeah. Well, England as well, they've got on the other side, Jadon Sancho, Marcus Rashford, Raheem Sterling. They've got some really good young talent too. Some players coming fresh off the Champions League final like Jordan Henderson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, who will be quite buoyed by that result. So it's all to be played for, but I'm going to say tomorrow morning that Portugal are going to come away with a scrappy 1-0 win over Switzerland.
Yeah, I'm going to say Portugal will defeat Switzerland, maybe 2-0. And then in the other game, I'm going to say the Netherlands are going to edge England 2-1.
You're going to say Netherlands with a 2-1 win. I'm going to go Netherlands with a 3-2 win. It's going to be a high-scoring game. And I think that the English, they're going to put up a good fight. But unfortunately, Netherlands are going to come away with the win.
Hopefully, the Netherlands will be privy to Trent Alexander-Arnold's corner kicks.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. His set pieces are absolutely fantastic. He's one of the best set-piece takers for a fullback going in the world. He can take his game to another level. And I think that,
he's been a bit cheeky, especially the UEFA Champions League. Barcelona didn't like what he did there.
Yeah, well, you know what? At the end of the day, you have to always be on your guard. And unfortunately, in that point in time, Barcelona weren't focusing and they took a full advantage. And now Liverpool, the champions, that went on, they got them to the final and they're six-time champions. And look, you know what? It's good to see that they've got that opportunity. I've spoken with a lot of Liverpool fans. They're still partying at the moment. They're still up and about. They're still super excited. So let's wait and see what they can back it up next year. But talking about this Nations League, I think this is going to be an incredible, incredible two games. Really excited to see how it pans out this weekend.
And moving on, looking at some of the Australian news, the Socceroos actually set to test themselves against the might of Lionel Messi's Argentina and Neymar's Brazil when they take part in the 2020 Copa America. Now, joining us to discuss it all is the Asian Game podcast, Paul Williams. Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Louise, how are you? It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. What a topic to talk about. Australia and Qatar have been invited to the 2020 edition. That's pretty valuable, isn't it, for them?
It's hugely valuable for the Socceroos, especially when you consider that World Cup qualifying, there will be coming towards the end of the second round of World Cup qualifying. So the third round, when I guess the preeminent teams in Asia take part, I mean, that's just about to get underway then. So that gives them some really good preparation against some high quality teams. And Qatar as well, they're going to be at this year's Copa America. It's a rare situation where there's Copa Americas in back-to-back years while they sort of sort out their spacing between their tournaments. So Qatar and Japan are invited to this year's tournament, and it was Qatar and China that were initially invited to next year's tournament. China declined that invitation, and stepping into their place is Australia, and that gives them some really good, as I said, some really good match preparation against some quality teams. And you don't get a chance often, the way that the international calendar is structured these days, to play matches against a lot of the big nations, and this gives Australia and Qatar that opportunity to do just that.
Paul, it's Nick here. And just having a look at, obviously, how this relationship between the AFC and CONMEBOL works. For those that don't know, can you give us a bit of context as to how this all came about?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can tell, there's no formal relationship that exists between the AFC and CONMEBOL. I mean, the associations generally work pretty closely together anyway. I mean, they have a pretty good relationships, and they all see each other at FIFA meetings and whatnot. As far as I can tell, I don't think there is any official relationship, MOU kind of thing between the two confederations. CONMEBOL they tend to invite two teams into their tournament. There's only 10 nations in CONMEBOL, so they invite two teams each time to put it up to 12, so they can at least have somewhat of a functional tournament going forward. So they've had, Mexico and the US in the past. Japan were invited back in 2011, had to decline because of the Tohoku earthquake that struck there. So Japan, as they got invited back this year, and it's no surprise that Qatar is invited. Qatar Airways is the major sponsor of CONMEBOL and all their confederational activities, the Libertadores and so on. So there's that relationship that exists between Qatar Airways and CONMEBOL. So I think they're just trying to, especially consider the fact they invited China as well, I think they're just trying to tap in a little bit to that Asian market that teams and confederations around the world are desperate to tap into. They're trying to do a little bit of that at the same time. So it makes sense on their behalf if they're going to invite a couple of teams that they try and expand their reach a little bit, I guess.
And Australia actually came pretty close to hosting the tournament, didn't they?
They did. They were surprised. And that was a story that kind of came from nowhere. It only came out, I think, at the time that the host was actually announced, that Australia was actually invited to bid. Before that, I'm not sure that anyone was actually aware that this was actually a possibility. I'm not sure quite how I feel about that. I mean, inviting teams to take part in a confederational tournament is already a stretch, but there's reasons why they do that. I'm not sure hosting a confederational tournament in another confederation is something I quite am comfortable with. I think that's a dangerous path for football to be heading down. You could see the Euros hosted in America or China or something like that. And I'm not sure that's really within the spirit of the game. But yeah, as you said, Australia was invited to bid. They did so. But in the end, they decided to keep it in South America, and it'll be co-hosted between Argentina and Colombia. So it'll be quite an interesting away trip for Australian fans if they choose to head there next June and July.
And Paul, do you know when we'll have an official decision or an announcement whether Australia actually will be competing next year?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, that FFA are working on that at the moment. They've got their heavy hitters over in Paris at the moment for the start of the FIFA Women's World Cup. There's the FIFA Congress, which has literally just got started in Paris as we're talking now. So as far as where David Gallup, Mark Falvo are over there and are working through the processes at the moment, going from some tweets, I think Adam Peacock tweeted it today, that the issue, I guess, is that it kind of, there's a little bit of a clash with World Cup qualifying. I think match days, potentially it's match days 9 and 10 of World Cup qualifying, there's an overlap there. So it would just, I guess, require a little bit of work from AFC to change some of the dates of Australia's matches. But the fact that Qatar's going to be involved as well, I dare say that, if this was just Australia, it could be a bit of a stretch to get AFC to do that. The fact that Qatar's going as well, I think it's pretty certain that those dates will be changed to allow flexibility in the calendar for Australia and Qatar to take part. So even though it's not official yet, I dare say probably within the next couple of weeks that'll be all confirmed as official.
And you touch on Australia's games. The pools have reportedly already been drawn up. Do you know which pool Australia is in?
No, I mean, the groups have already effectively been decided. I said there's two hosts, Argentina and Colombia, and there's quite some distance between those two countries. So I think they're grouping the nations kind of a little bit based on geography. I think the only thing that hasn't been decided is which group Australia go into and which group Qatar go into. There must be some kind of draw or something to determine that. So that bit hasn't been decided yet, but everything else in terms of which group is which has been. So Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay are all in the same group. Brazil might be in that one as well. So, the only thing just to be determined is which group Australia is actually going to play in, and that throws up all sorts of possibilities. I'm sure the idea of Australia taking on Leo Messi in Argentina is quite a mouth-watering one.
Yeah, it certainly is, Paul. And this year's Copa America obviously did say it does feature both Japan and Qatar. How do you see both of these teams performing this year?
It'll be interesting because the teams they've taken, I mean, Qatar's taken a strong squad, so they're looking to build on their Asian Cup success, and they're now really building towards 2022. That's their end goal, is to have a competitive team for that tournament. So they've taken a squad that is largely the same. I think there was three changes from their Asian Cup squad, so it is a very strong squad. Japan, on the other hand, has taken somewhat of an experimental squad. It's not their strongest squad. They've also got one eye on Tokyo 2020 next year, which is at the moment the number one focus for Japanese football, is to have a competitive squad. They are gunning for gold at the home Olympics. So they've got a lot of young players in that side, sent them over there to get experience at a major tournament. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. I think, you know, certainly they can be competitive against probably some of the lesser nations in South America. How they go against the bigger nations and the stronger nations, I'm not sure they'll be able to quite match it with those teams, but it'll be interesting. I mean, we saw Qatar, how well they did at the Asian Cup. Can they continue that momentum and maybe pick up some surprise results at the Copa America? That would do great wonders for their reputation around the world if they could do so.
And how did some of the Qatari stars do and fare in their domestic leagues?
Really well. I mean, the players for the Qatari team usually come from one or two clubs. It's either Al Saad or Al Dahail, and they dominated domestically this year. Al Saad won the league, absolutely romped it in. I mean, they scored 100 goals in the league. They averaged almost 3 or 4 goals a game. They were a remarkable team. Akram Afif, Abdulkarim Hassan, stars from the Asian Cup play for them. Al-Mawaz Ali, who we saw at the Asian Cup, was the leading scorer. He plays for Al Dahail as well. So both those teams are through to the AFC Champions League round of 16. In fact, they've been drawn to play each other in the AFC Champions League round of 16 in August. So they're domestically, they're the two strongest clubs, and as I said, they provide the bulk of the players to the national team. So domestically, the players have done really well. And the Qatar Cup, the EMEA Cup final, was actually on beIN Sports here in Australia a couple of weeks ago, and Al Dahail got the better of Al Saad on that occasion. Domestically, the players have been flying.
And Paul, tomorrow the actual World Cup Asian qualifiers do kick off. It's all the sort of the minnows of Asian football kicking off. Can you tell us a little bit about these?
Yeah, so the way it works is the 12 lowest ranked nations in Asia participate in the first round qualifying, which, as you said, gets underway with the first legs tomorrow. So the six winners of those games will advance to the second round, where the other 34 nations will join, making 40 teams, and they get then split into eight groups of five. So there's some really interesting matchups tomorrow. Malaysia is by far the strongest team in this phase of qualifying. They fell right down the FIFA rankings and slipped into this bottom 12. They take on Timor-Leste. You've got Bhutan and Guam, who are kind of like the darlings of World Cup qualifying last time. They face off against each other. So you've got some really interesting matchups there. And as you said, that first legs get underway tomorrow, second legs next week on the 11th. And I'll just give a bit of a plug to the Asian Game podcast here. We've got our latest podcast, which just came out last night. We've got a full preview of that first round of qualifying and spoke to the captain of Bhutan and the captain of Mongolia as well. So some really interesting insight into some of Asia's minnow nations there.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and we'll speak to you again in the coming weeks.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to it.
Thank you. That was Paul Williams from the Asian Game podcast. Nick, we might take a quick break and then come back and recap all the latest news.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Louise Taffer with Nick Debano joining me here in the studio. We've just learned that Australia will be participating in the 2020
Copa America. Almost there.
Pretty much there.
Yeah, 90%.
99%.
We're just waiting for the confirmation. Just waiting for the confirmation from the FFA. But
which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I reckon it's absolutely unreal that this could be happening.
We never get to play those countries.
Well, very rarely. World Cups here and there, the occasional international friendly. I reckon that this is really cool. I am very excited for this.
I want to ask you, what would be Australia's strongest squad that they would send to this?
So you want me to look 1 year in advance? Or do you want to talk about hypothetically that we're looking ahead to if they'll play in the Copa America in 2 weeks' time?
Okay, well, question without notice. You could either do that one or you could pick maybe five key players that would be...
I'll pick a squad.
Okay.
All right, this is what I think hypothetically by the time we come around to the Copa America next year who I think are going to go.
Do you need me to give you some time to think about
it? No. I reckon I'll do this off the top of my head.
Okay, go.
All right, so Matty Ryan, goalkeepers, Matty Ryan, definitely. I reckon Danny Vukovic will still be kicking around by then. I reckon he'll definitely go. And I reckon either Lawrence Thomas or Mitch Langerak. So I'm going to say Lawrence Thomas is going to be the third goalkeeper by that point in time.
What's happening to Andrew Redmayne?
Andrew Redmayne will come close. He'll be in the provisional squad. The centre-backs, so I think they'll pick four centre-backs. Milos Deganek, Trent Sainsbury. I reckon they're going to go with, by that stage, Thomas Deng, because I reckon his versatility is going to be a big, big plus. And I reckon the fourth centre-back is going to come down to either, I reckon we're going to be looking at either Matthew Sporanovic, Matthew Yerman, or Reece Williams as one of the four. I hear Athos Syriades behind the glass yelling, what?
Maybe
they're experienced players and they had good seasons, so I think one of them will definitely go.
Maybe he's trying to back Harry Suter.
Maybe. If he hits some good form over in England and gets some minutes for Stoke next year, definitely. Left backs, Aziz Bajic and Alex Gersbach. Right backs, Ryan Grant. And I'm probably going to say that he will be the only right back because Thomas Deng will be used as the backup due to his versatility. Central midfielders, the usual suspects, Aaron Moy, Mas Luongo, Jackson Irvine, Tommy Rogic. I think Daniel Arzani will go. He'll be fit by that point in time. So that is now 7, 5, 12, 15 players I've picked. I'm going to say in terms of other midfielders that we could see, I reckon to this is now it gets tough because this is where the talent pool is very deep. I reckon by that point in time, if Dennis Jonro is still playing in the Netherlands, he'll definitely be there as well. And I think the other one as well that we may see that may find himself in the squad is one of either Mustafa Amini, Terry Antonis, or Brandon Borrello. So they're one of some of the midfielders I'm looking at that are playing in this squad at the moment. I reckon they'll definitely be in contention. So that takes to about, we've got about six attackers to pick from. So we've got 17 names. The six attackers I'm going to go with, I'm going to say Chris Economides, Matthew Leckie, Owen Mabil, Jamie McLaren, I reckon will be in the squad, Martin Boyle, and I reckon the sixth and final one is probably going to be Adam Taggart by that point in time. I reckon his form will put him there in the squad as a backup striker for that point. And if you're going to put anyone else that might come close, Andrew Naboo will probably be in and around.
So you're going to say no Robbie Cruz?
Nah, Robbie Cruz won't be getting picked.
No Apo Gianu?
No. Nah.
None of them?
I love Apo, but I think he's just going to miss out. And I think Tommy Urich needs to get himself a club if he wants any chance of getting in there. But I think that's my 23.
Okay.
That's looking literally
fair.
If we had to looking ahead
nothing
in the next year.
Nothing really groundbreaking.
No,
Nick.
I don't think there's going to be anyone like any big shockers unless anyone comes in and absolutely tears it up in the next year that we don't know of.
Josh Berlante?
No. Josh Berlante, very unlikely that we'll see him in the team. But I think
another Josh Parrish and I were questioning how he made the experimental squad.
CFC. Maybe. I don't know. But then again, though, versatility. I don't want to put my tin hat on and say, yeah, you know, it was this because of Graham Arnold conspiracy. Obviously, he sees something. I don't know what it is. But then again, though, look, he could come out and play, if he plays, and play really well. He could actually come out and have a great season next year. You never know with
I guess
Josh Berlante.
This upcoming game, which is on Friday, we can't forget because the Socceroos are in action the 7th of June.
Yep.
He has basically selected an experimental squad, as
it's
we know.
Very experimental.
So a lot of these players will be building their case why they should be named in the Socceroos squad moving forward.
A lot of these guys are getting picked because also these guys have had grueling seasons over in Europe and a lot of them do need a rest. Like guys like Matty Ryan, your Trent Sainsbury's, your Milos Deganek, Luongo, Rogic, Moy.
Some of
they deserve some
players.
Time off. Give some of these other guys just an opportunity to be part of the Socceroos setups. Guys that haven't been part of it for a while and guys who have never been part of this system like Brandon O'Neill. You've got Brandon Borrello, Harry Suter. These guys, Redmayne and Lawrence Thomas, one of them will make their debut, which I think is really exciting. They might even play a half each in this game. So, look, I think it's good to see that they're testing the talent pool, I think. I think Jason Davidson's a little bit disappointing. I would have liked to have seen him get a recall. Other than that, I think that's about right in terms of the experimental players.
It's going to
maybe Denis Jonreau.
Hopefully Denis Jonreau. I would love to see Arzani and Denis Jonreau back in the Socceroos camp because we did see them once.
Yeah, once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Last year.
Sparingly.
Unfortunately, Arzani's knee, he didn't hold up this year and obviously had that knee injury. So hopefully
he is coming
back.
He's been doing weights in the gym.
That's good. That's good. At least he's ramping up the rehab. If we can get Daniel Arzani in by the time World Cup qualifiers come kicking around, which should be in a few months' time, and in the lead up to potentially the Copa America next year, hopefully he puts together some solid club form and get himself right back in the Socceroos reckoning.
Now, I've seen the pools have been drawn up, as we touched on with Paul Williams. Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Venezuela are in one. Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, Paraguay, and Uruguay are in the other.
Wow.
Which pool would you like to see Australia in? A or B?
A or B?
I'm just going to say A or B.
Well, are you saying, it's the North Zone or the South Zone? Almost?
So A is Brazil, yep. B is Argentina.
So in the North Zone, you got either Brazil, Colombia or Peru who made the World Cup, and Ecuador and no slouch. Venezuela, they're sort of the minnows. You can take the South Zone, you got Argentina, Uruguay and Chile. And Paraguay aren't bad. Bolivia, another one of the minnows. This is very difficult. I'm going to say the South Zone. I think they've got a better chance of getting through in the South Zone, only because I think in the North Zone that the four teams, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru, are definitely going to go through. In the South Zone, they could probably sneak into fourth, because I think if you got Argentina, Chile, and Uruguay ahead of them, they could probably compete with Paraguay and Bolivia to a decent level. Chile, I reckon they could potentially compete with as well. They're a team that are sort of, they're not at the same level they once were. But Argentina and Uruguay, I fear, maybe not as much Argentina as much anymore in terms of their defensive midfield, but up front,
Uruguay?
They've still got Uruguay, forget it. Like, they are not the Uruguay of 2005. This is a team that have so much talent, and it's not going to change much in a year. Fernando Muslera in goals, Jimenez and Godin in centre back. You've got Diego Laxal, Martin Caceres, Giovanni Gonzalez in the midfield, Vecino, Bentancur. Lucas Torreira, Nandez up front, Suarez, Cavani, Stuani. There is so much talent in this Uruguay team, and he's so scary. So I would give Australia a better chance of actually beating Argentina than what I would against them beating Uruguay, because I think Argentina are very suspect in defence and midfield, whilst Uruguay have got this brilliant even spread where really they shouldn't be conceding goals with that centre-back partnership of Godin and Jimenez, who play weekly for Atletico Madrid. I know Godin will be going to Inter next year, But regardless, they've had that much time together playing internationally and for their club, that this is just, like, I fear for that. And if Graham Arnold's going to be cross doing the crossing tactic of trying to cross to small Jamie McLaren in the box or Matthew Leckie, there is no chance Australia are going to be scoring goals against the lumbering pair of Jimenez and Godin, because they'll just clear every single time.
They'll read it like a Harry Potter book.
Exactly, exactly. Not even a Harry Potter book, a kid's picture book. It'd be a very easy read. The ball coming into the box would be cleared every single time. Mm. I think, though, that if they get the North Zone and come up against Brazil and Colombia and Peru, and they know very well how quick Peru are from that World Cup, oh boy, that's going to be, interesting.
We're talking about Argentina and Uruguay. Unfortunately, both teams at under 20 level exited the competition in the round of 16.
There's a bit of a boil over. USA won against France as well.
Yeah, incredible. But unfortunately for Argentina, they lost 5-4 on penalties to Mali, and Uruguay lost 3-1 in normal time to Ecuador. So they leave the competition in the round of 16, which you'd think that they would at least make a quarterfinal.
Yeah, you'd hope so. You'd hope that the future of a big nation like that would be doing, obviously, a little bit better. Mali, though, great effort by their standards. Uruguay losing against Ecuador too. That's a bit of an upset in that sort of aspect, as well as Mali. I've always said Mali with that win, that really came out of nowhere.
It's like all of the African nations, though, at that level seem to do really well.
There's two African nations in the quarters, Mali and Senegal. Mali play Italy next, who came away with a 1-0 win against Poland, I believe it was. Did you see the penalty in that game?
I did.
The nice Panenka by Pinamonti. That was beautiful, absolutely fantastic.
And he scored quite a few goals so far this tournament. Two, actually.
Two goals, yep. That's not too bad.
Not as many as the Norwegian, Erling, who scored nine goals in one game.
Well, he's already won the Golden Boot.
An under-20 FIFA World Cup record.
Yeah. There's no way he's losing the Golden Boot from here.
No.
Well, I think that the obviously the eight teams left, you've got Colombia, Uruguay, Italy, Mali, the US, Ecuador, South Korea and Senegal. Who do you see winning it from here, Louise? You're the youth football expert. I know that you went to the last under-20s World Cup. Teams are a little bit different from what they were then. But who do you see coming away with the trophy this year? Who's impressed you?
I could probably see a United States. I feel like
they've got a lot of players playing in Europe, don't they?
They do. Even at the last under-20 FIFA World Cup, they had a lot of players who really stood out. I feel like they're coming leaps and bounds in their development at the moment. Yep. Even a South Korea.
Yeah. Well, they had a lot of those players as well play already for the national team, which that's great experience. And there's one guy, just quickly going back to America, Timothy Way, the 19-year-old from PSG.
He played at
Celtic,
the other under-20 FIFA World Cup.
You've got him leading your line. That is very, very scary outlook. And I look at some of these other teams. Italy, they've got some really good young players that are in this side as well. Alessandro Plizzardi in goals. Matteo Gabbia as well, who also plays for Milan. They've got guys like Pinamonti, who played his whole season at Frosinone last year on loan from Inter. That showed a lot. And Luca Pellegrini as well, the left-back from Roma. So they've got some good players there as well, Italy. So I think I'm going to back the Azzurri in to go deep. I think that this is a bright future and a bit of a turn to see what we're going to see from Italy coming forward.
Well, let me tell you, in 2017 at the last under-20 FIFA World Cup, Italy made it to the semi-finals after they beat Zambia 3-2.
Yep.
They made it to the semi-finals where they faced the eventual under-20 FIFA World Cup champions, which is England, the Young Lions.
So how did England not make the World Cup this time around?
It was a massive shock.
That's a huge shock.
Not even Germany made the under-20 FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, because like England's under-20s, like they've still got a very, very decent team. Like, but a lot of them now are almost being fast-tracked a little bit.
Well, they had been moved on, so it clearly wasn't the same under-20 team. It would have been under-19 squad.
Yeah.
But it was a big shock at the time when qualifiers, did come around because England weren't there. Germany weren't there, which was a massive shock. Some big countries from Europe, but unfortunately, Italy ended up going down to England 3-1 in the semifinals in the 2017 edition of the under-20 FIFA World Cup. So they came pretty close. If they can overcome, Mali in this next match, potentially go one more, then they will face either Colombia or Ukraine in the semi.
Well, I just want to quickly, Italy very well in a good position. But just looking at this, just quickly going back to this England team, I'm just got their team up from that under-20 World Cup, Louise. This is a very good team.
A lot of them are
Lewis
in the prem.
Cook, Dominic Solanke, Adamoah Lookman, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Kyle Walker-Peters, Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
Dean Henderson, who's on loan from Manchester United, young goalkeeper coming up.
Fike Otomori as well, who played at Derby last year. Jonjo Kenny, Callum Connolly, Adam Armstrong. There are a lot of quality players in that team. So no wonder that the talent, like it's been such a turnover in 2 years' time. No wonder that it's almost been just about getting that next crop through. And I'm looking at this team, what they've actually got that played in their most recent games. It's not bad. They've got Eddie Nketiah, who plays for Arsenal. Reece James as well, who we spoke about before. Trevor Chalobah as well, who's on loan from Chelsea. Conor Gallagher as well. So they've got some decent players. But obviously, as you say, there is obviously a changing of the guard that's happened over these last few years.
Even with you look at some of the other countries who are in the Copa America, right? So in 2017, we actually had Venezuela make the under-20 FIFA World Cup final, where England defeated them 1-0 thanks to Dom Calvert-Lewin.
Yep.
But you would have never predicted that Venezuela would have gotten that far. And at the time, there was a lot of political upheaval, so it was a really big time in their history for them to get so far in a Youth World Cup. Similarly, Uruguay took out the third-place spot at that tournament. So you can still see the South American wave coming through, but it's not as dominant as it once was, which
Brazil
is a little
gone
bit of a
to the
shock.
Last two. Brazil haven't gone to the last two,
No, and Argentina actually exited in the group stage at that tournament.
That is interesting. That is really interesting. It's almost
like
the minnow step up.
Nick, I remember going to what was my first under-20 FIFA World Cup game, right? It was in Jeonju, and it was Argentina taking on England. My jaw dropped because England, I never knew that England would defeat Argentina 3-0. They defeated them 3-0. And I was just thinking,
wow,
how does this happen?
Yeah.
You'd expect Argentina to have the upper hand.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even close.
It's unbelievable what happens at these Youth World Cups, you did say, because it's almost like these teams just step up. Like the minnow teams love this sort of chance to show what they can got, because at the senior level, they're not necessarily at the same level. Now, just before we go, Louise, we're closing in on as well some big games this weekend. Women's World Cup kicking off on Saturday morning, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that a little bit more in the next coming days. France, South Korea kicking us off at 5 a.m. The hosts, people are starting to peter into the nation as we get a little bit closer towards it all kicking off, and I can't believe another World Cup just around the corner.
Yeah, very, very exciting. You touch on Group A will get us underway with France and South Korea. That'll be a very interesting game because France have a lot of attacking quality. They're very good in defence. One of their defenders is like 6'5", very, very tall. I'll get a name. Wendy Renard.
Okay. And just before we go, Louise, as well, the European next round of European Championship qualifiers kick off this weekend. And if you head over to our website in the next coming day or so, myself and Athos Syriaz are penning up a Greece-Italy preview. This is arguably one of the biggest games among the cultural communities here in Australia, because Greece and Italy very rarely meet. And you've got the big Greek background, the big Italian background. So myself and Athos, representing our nations, are going to write up a big preview. We're going to have a bit of fun with this one. Send over to our website very soon. We'll get that up all on the socials, because I can't wait for that Sunday morning. Some other big games between Turkey and France and Croatia-Wales as well to get excited for over this weekend. So some big games happening in all facets of football. The club season's over, but the international season's well on and kicking, and I can't wait for it to all kick off this weekend.
Enjoy all of those games.
Technically tomorrow, actually, Nations League.
Yes, tomorrow.
Yes,
Nations League.
Portugal,
action.
Switzerland. Can't wait for it all to kick off.
Watch out for that wonder kid, João Félix.
Hopefully gets on the field.
I'm sure he'll come on for a sub appearance. Nick, thank you for joining me. Thank you for your company at home. If you missed any of the show, head to FNR's website or FNR SoundCloud. I'm Louise Taffer with Nick DiBano. We'll see you again at the same time tomorrow. Bye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.